Hey, what's up? This is Fahim Musa of RadicalTribe.com. Welcome to episode 39 of The Freedom Show. This is where you learn to escape 9 to 5 and create your own freedom by starting a business. Today on the show, we have Derek Sivers. Derek is the founder of CD Baby, an online independent music retailer, which Derek started several years ago and eventually sold. And he's done tons of interviews talking about his story of CD Baby, how he started, how he grew the business, various challenges, etc., etc. So normally, as you know, in these case studies of mine, in these interviews, I delve really deep into how a founder started and grew their business. But in this interview with Derek, I do talk about CD Baby and, you know, briefly talk about how he grew the business, but it's not as deep as some of my other interviews. If you really want to know the CD Baby story, then all you have to do is just go to sivers.org. He's got a list of all the podcasts he's done, and you'll find that story in detail in one of his other podcasts. So this podcast, this episode, I really wanted to understand Derek's philosophy for work and life, and we talk about some of the things he believes in and some of the ways he manages his life as a solopreneur. So that's the focus of this interview. So for those of you who are curious about working for yourself and just want to do it all by yourself, just be a one-person business mostly, then this would be a great interview. It's a great interview nonetheless, because Derek is really a very, very interesting, fascinating gentleman. So before we get into the interview, I just want to say that if you're listening to this interview on iTunes or somewhere else on the web, and you want case studies like these as and when they're published, then all you have to do is go to radicaltribe.com/subscribe and type in your email address and never miss a show. Here's Derek Sivers. Derek, welcome. Welcome to Radical Tribe. Super to have you here.
Thanks, Fahim.
So let's, I want to learn more about you, Derek. Can you talk about your background and, you know, your work and how you started working for yourself?
How I started working for myself. It's funny, ever since I was 14 years old, I wanted to be a successful musician. So that meant ever since I was 14, I knew that I would never have a job. I would never have a paycheck. I would never have insurance or a pension or security of any sort. And that's always been my mindset, right? So every now and then somebody asks me, like, how did you get the courage to quit your job and follow your dreams? And I'm like, well, never really that mindset for me. I think like a musician is an entrepreneur. A musician is always working for himself. So yes, I did do some jobs during college and out of college, but I quit my last job in 1992. I think that you should always be working for yourself. I think it's a good aim to never work only for the money. You always have to have a bigger reason that you're doing any job. You know, so like I did get a job in the music business for a while. I was working at Warner Brothers, but it was like a minimum wage job. It was just my way of learning the inside of the industry and making connections, and it worked, you know. It got a lot of learning and experience and connections and skills from doing that. So I think that whatever we do for a job needs to be building to something in the future, not just doing something for the money in the present.
Right. So talk to us about your music career. You know, when you were 14, you wanted to be a musician. You started working at smaller places. But talk to us about your music career. Where did that go?
Actually, by my own measure, I did pretty well. I didn't get onto the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, but I made a full time living from the age of, really from age of 18 to 28, except from 18 to 22, I did some other jobs. But really then, I guess from 22 to 28, I was a full-time musician. I even bought a house with the money I made touring. So I didn't get super rich or famous, but I was able to make a decent living just playing music. So, you know, I talk about the comparison between being an entrepreneur and being a musician. The way you make a living as a musician in New York City, or I guess anywhere, is you just say yes to everything. It's like you are always on the hustle, you know. You're anybody who's looking for any kind of musician, you try to find a way to say yes to it. So it was great training, you know, whether somebody was looking for a heavy metal guitarist or a jazz piano player, I would say, well, what does it pay? And they'd say, it pays $300. I'd say, okay, I can do it. And then I'd quickly go learn how to play jazz piano, you know. So I guess the peak of my music career was when I released an album, and then it was played on a few hundred radio stations across the U.S. and sold 1,000 copies or so, and that's what led to me starting CD Baby, is I was just really creating a website to sell my own CD. But then my friends asked if I could sell theirs too, and that became that. Yep.
So, yeah, CD Baby is what you're most famous for in the entrepreneurial world, at least. So talk about that. Talk about, like, you already started talking about you needed a website to sell your CDs and your friends asked you to sell theirs. So can you give us a brief, about that journey and how that business grew?
Sure. Well, it's hard to imagine now in 2015, but in 1997, the internet was pretty new, and there was literally not anywhere on the internet that would sell your music for you. Like, if you were a musician that had put out your own album and you weren't signed to a big record label, then there was just nowhere that would sell it except some guy named Derek in New York. I was the only one that set up this thing just to scratch my own itch to build, you know, to sell my own CD, because there was no business that would do it for me. So I built this little system with an online shopping cart, processing credit cards, and I was it. So word of mouth got around really fast, and the business just grew faster than I ever expected. I didn't even really mean to start a business. It was just helping out some of my friends, and then it was helping friends of friends. And then after a while, when I had about 25 various friends of friends on my band's website, I felt like I should give those people their own website. So that's what CD Baby was. But yeah, it just took off. It grew. I had no investors. I wasn't even trying to grow the business, but I was just in the right place at the right time. And it just exploded, took off. It became the largest seller of independent music on the web, with something like 185,000 musicians and 10 million in sales. Or was it 100 million? I don't even know. Altogether, it got huge. I had 85 employees eventually, and that was just too big for my tastes. I was not happy. And also, I felt like I had finished everything I set out to do. So after 10 years of doing it, I sold the company in 2008.
You said something really interesting. You were in the right place at the right time. How important is that for, you know, a business? For a new entrepreneur to starting out and really succeeding, how important is that?
Well, I guess you could say it's crucial, because if you're not in the right place at the right time, then you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that means it's probably not working. I think there have been a lot of businesses that we've seen, especially, you know, if you've been online for a while or been around for 20 years, you've seen a lot of things that were just before their time, you know, that just weren't ready yet. I mean, I think about, God, there was a website called eMusic, mm-hmm, that was doing, like, selling MP3s back in the 90s. And they were just too early. The world wasn't ready for that. And though I remember that in 2003 is when the iTunes Music Store launched. And here was Apple saying, you know, we're going to revolutionize the music industry. You can now buy MP3s for 99 cents. And the world went, oh my God, you're brilliant. Where did you think of that? But really, you know, eMusic had been doing the same thing for many years with no success. Mm-hmm. So remember, yeah, when the iTunes Music Store launched, I thought, like, this will never go well, because, you know, eMusic did it already and it failed. But no, eMusic was just wrong place, wrong time, just a little ahead of their time. So yeah, it's crucial.
Yeah, the reason I asked you about that, because we see so many people, you know, struggling to build businesses, you know, working hard day and night and, you know, really breaking their backs, trying to build a business and, you know, formulate different strategies and, you know, tactics and, you know, creative things that you do to build your business, et cetera, et cetera. And there are some businesses like yours that, you know, just grow because you're just there at the, you know, you've started the business at the right time.
Yeah. Well, I actually would like to propose that anybody who's struggling too much with their business should stop. Because in hindsight, I mean, we talk about CD Baby, but I actually started, I don't know, 6 or 7 different businesses that just didn't go well. I started a record label, a booking agency, a recording studio, and I did a bunch of other things that just never really worked out very well. You could even say my band was like a little business, you know? Mm-hmm. It did okay, but nothing, you know, I made a few thousand dollars, but nothing that great. So when I started CD Baby, suddenly it was just, I could tell that I was now doing something that everybody wanted. And you can just feel the difference. You know, and so my advice to people that are banging their heads against the wall, doing something that the world is not begging them to do, if it's getting too difficult, they should stop and do something else. Try another idea. And I think I'm influenced by the fact that songwriters in the music industry can either be the type of songwriter that has written one song about their wife or something like that, and they are trying to get this one song recorded by some famous artist, and they try and try and try, and they'll bang their heads against the wall in Nashville and New York and Los Angeles for 10 years trying to get somebody to record this one song. And of course, it just doesn't go well. Mm-hmm. But hit songwriters usually are the ones that just, they keep writing songs. They write more and more and more, and they write a new song every week. They're constantly recording. You never look back. You just keep creating. And then every now and then, something you've written is in the right place at the right time and becomes a huge hit. You know. So I think entrepreneurs should learn from this lesson and make sure that you're never feeling like this current idea that you're working on right now is the only great idea you have, or is the only thing that's worth doing. I think you need to feel that if this one just doesn't seem to be clicking with the world, then move on. Try another idea. Don't get too attached to any one idea.
So I think the idea of you know, being perseverant, you keep hearing people say that one of the biggest, best, or you know, the most important traits of an entrepreneur is perseverance. So it's perseverance not on just that one idea which isn't working, but perseverance, you know, as an entrepreneur, trying out different things, experimenting with different things, and not like stopping that.
Exactly. Yes, I think people have misdefined the word persistence or perseverance. And they accidentally think it means doing the exact same thing over and over and over again. But of course not. It's supposed to be, you know, when people tell you the value of persistence, it means, you know, don't get depressed and go home and get a job at McDonald's. You know, keep trying. But of course, you have to constantly try different things. And if this idea isn't working and it's been, I don't know, a month or two and people aren't freaking out and opening up their wallets to try to give you money, then let it go. Try a different approach. And you keep trying different things until something works.
Let me ask you about, you know, the difference between, you know, starting and running those 6 businesses that didn't work out and then CD Baby. Were you actually doing something different in terms of, you know, operating your business, or, you know, having a, you know, the way you ran those businesses versus running CD Baby? Did you do something different that
not at all? No, there was no difference in operations or any approach. I mean, I guess you could say that CD Baby grew out of a spirit of trying to do a favor for people. Mm-hmm. So that felt a little different. But even then, you could maybe say that my recording studio was kind of a favor to people. I was kind of helping out my fellow musicians. So no, in short, No, there was no difference in what I was doing. It's just that the idea of online music distribution for independent musicians, that was just the idea that the market needed at that right time. And it was just, yeah, even the timing, the fact that I started it at the beginning of 1998, just as this whole like MP3 revolution kind of started at the end of 1998. So I'd already been up and running CD Baby for like 9 months. And you got to understand, by the way, I misspoke a little earlier when I said, like, if people aren't freaking out over your idea after a month, then let it go. I need to take that back, because I need to explain also that although I felt big enthusiasm from people about CD Baby, it was still very few people, right? So even after CD Baby was like 6 months old, I was still only getting like one or two orders a week. Mm-hmm. So luckily, I mean, I kept my costs down to nothing. I had no employees. It was just me in my bedroom. So my costs were nothing. So if I made $300 in a month, I was profitable that month. And yeah, there were quite a few months where I was really only making like $500. But the people that did discover it, when people found out about it, they would passionately freak out, like, oh my God, this is amazing. I can't believe you done it. Oh my God, this changes my life. This is great. And they would happily open up their wallets and pay me lots of money to do this thing. So even though I didn't have a ton of customers, I could tell I was onto something. And it really took 2 years before it started making real money. Like, it wasn't until a whole year into it that I needed to get my first employee. And it wasn't until 2 years into it that I needed my second employee. And I think like 2.5 years into it is when it really started to take off and felt like you could really feel like something was happening. But yeah, so I think people also do need some patience with the growth of their business. I do meet people that have, they come to me saying, hey man, my business just isn't working really well. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And I say, well, how long have you been doing it? They said, I've been doing it for like 4 months. It's just not working. Like, come on, you know, 4 months is nothing. Like, people haven't even heard of you yet. You're just getting started. So it can take a few years for things to get rolling, but you need to feel that the real enthusiasm, the difference between if you tell your friends about your business idea or you tell people about it and they go, oh yeah, cool, that sounds really cool, I should check that out sometime, then what they've really just given you is like a polite no. Mm-hmm. No, that's not enough. What you really need to hear is if you tell people about the business and they say like, oh my God, I need that right now. Can I pay you now? Can I pay you to be your first customer even if you're not open yet? Like, can I pay you some money now so I can be there on opening day? Can I be in your beta testers list? When you've got that kind of response, then you know you're onto something.
And you found that you got that kind of response right from the early days, even if it was from one or two people.
Yeah, well, even you could say before the business even started. It wasn't even a business yet before I had strangers calling me up saying, you know, like I said, my friend Dave said you could sell my CD. Is that something you can do for me? Oh my God, that would be amazing. Here, what can I pay you to sell my CD on your band's website? So it's like the business didn't even exist yet. Mm-hmm. And people were really asking me to do this thing. So yeah, that's how I knew that it was, okay, this is something people need. And then I think that things happened, like a friend of mine had a little tiny musician newsletter and he announced it in his newsletter. And right, instantly, like, everybody on the newsletter contacted me and signed up immediately. And that kind of thing kept happening over and over again because, yeah, like I said, there was nobody else offering this thing at all. I had no competitors until maybe a year into it is when the first competitor showed up, but it was too late
for them.
For them, yeah.
How much effort were you putting into the business in the first 2.5 years? Like, how many hours a day were you focusing on this business?
All of them. I mean, it helps that I was at a time in my life where I was, you know, single, no kids, no other responsibilities. So yeah, I would wake up at 7 a.m. and work all day until midnight. At midnight, I would go to sleep for a few hours and wake up and do it again 7 days a week. And I did that for really the whole 10 years. I think maybe in the 10th year, I started to live a little, do a couple things that weren't working. But no, pretty much For 10 whole years, I worked 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to midnight.
Would you do anything differently if you were to start again? I mean, not forget the market factors and where the industry is right now, but if you were to go back to the time when you started the business, would you do anything differently?
No. Nothing comes to mind. I think there's... I can't call anything a mistake, really. I don't really have any regrets. I wouldn't make any changes. I think it's kind of like if someone didn't mean to get pregnant and have a child, but they do have a child, then of course they love the outcome and they wouldn't consider anything a mistake and wouldn't do anything differently. Mm-hmm. Even if they didn't necessarily mean to have that child, like they're glad they did. So there were some things along the way.
That's the best answer I've heard for that question.
Thank you. It's just, you asked that question, I'm sitting here thinking for a minute, it's like, no, there's, I mean, I wrote in my book, I put out a book called Anything You Want that is really a summary of all these kind of things we're talking about. I try to compress into a 1 hour read the most important lessons I learned from starting, building, and selling CD Baby. So it's a book called Anything You Want. It's on Penguin Publishers, so it's for sale everywhere. And there is a chapter in there that you'll see called My $3.3 Million Mistake. So I guess, yes, I named the chapter that because, yes, it was a big mistake. It was probably my biggest single mistake. I talk about that. And then there was the mistake I made with Apple iTunes where Steve Jobs dissed me pretty much personally from the stage, called me out all but by name in one of his keynote speeches, and that was pretty devastating. So that was a mistake. But I think with each thing that happened, almost right away, I learned such an important lesson from it that I'm actually glad it happened. You know what I mean? Because otherwise I wouldn't have learned that lesson.
So wait,
let me give you one more time.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, there was one more tiny example that I've never written about. That there was a guy, the details aren't worth going into, but I got, somebody kind of publicly attacked me, right? So I've never been sued, but I've always kind of wondered what it was like when somebody like out of the blue just sues you over nothing. You know, the classic case of like a stranger suing you, a wrongful lawsuit, a frivolous lawsuit, they call them.
Or coffee's too hot, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Americans are kind of notorious for these things, right? So luckily I wasn't sued, but there was one guy that just like out of the blue, like over nothing, conjured up something and launched like a really public, vicious personal attack against me. I think he was just doing it to like get attention to himself. But I'm actually really glad it happened because it made me realize how I was like vulnerable in some other ways and how like, wow, you know, luckily that was just a PR attack, but that could have been a lawsuit attack. So I need to protect myself in these other ways. And yeah, it's just with each of these things that were unfortunate, you could say, I ended up being glad they happened.
Just very quickly, what was that $3.3 million mistake?
Back when I was running my recording studio, years before I started CD Baby, I was just a musician, mid-20s, living in New York. I kind of hit some hard times and I was completely broke and asked my dad if I could borrow some money. And he said, no, but if you start a company, I can have my company invest in your company. I said, oh, okay, well, whatever. It's just paperwork. Does that mean, yes, I can borrow some money? He said, well, you know, if you set it up this way, sure, you can. So I set up a company and his company invested in my company. And I think it was like $12,000 or something like that. It was enough to kind of get me out of a really hard time. And a few years later, I actually paid back the $12,000. So I just thought that we were all free and clear. And then a few years later, I started CD Baby, totally different, unrelated thing. And I went, the first time I got a check made payable to CD Baby, I went down to my local bank and said, I need to open a new bank account because I've started a new business. And the bank teller said, oh, you don't need to open a new account. You can just use your existing account. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you'd have to pay $100 to open a whole new business bank account. So you could just make your new business like a DBA, you know, doing business as, alias of your existing business. Saves you $100. I said, oh, okay, sure, I'll just do that then. And I didn't find out till years later that what I had just done is I had made CD Baby an alias of this company that my dad's company had invested in years earlier. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find out till later that that meant that my dad's company actually owned 90% of CD Baby, all because I was trying to save $100 and use an alias instead of making it a separate business. So that was my big mistake.
So what happened? Like your dad owned the company, his company, right? So
So I had to come up. We had to hire an outside valuation company because the IRS watches interfamily transactions very closely, mm-hmm. because they don't want trying to scam them out of their due. So I had to hire an outside valuation company to valuate CD Baby, and it turns out that I had to come up with $3.3 million of my own money in order to buy back 90% of my company from my dad's company. And so, yeah, I did it.
that's quite a story. So it wasn't all smooth sailing for you, Derek, even though, you know, the business just took off and everybody loved it. You had some challenges for sure.
That was probably it, though. I mean, in general, it really... The other comparison I think of is, again, I'm doing like a music business songwriting comparison, is I read a lot of interviews with songwriters that said that they had written, you know, dozens of songs or sometimes hundreds of songs, and they don't even know why that particular song became a hit. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's just... It's not that that song was any better than the others, or that they had worked harder on it or anything else. It was just... Sometimes it was just that song happened to be the closing credits of a movie that became a hit because the star of the movie died right before the movie came out. And so everybody went to see it and their song was now in the closing credits and became a number one hit. You know, mm-hmm. these kind of random things happen. And I do think that CD Baby was kind of just a random success for me that I can't take too much credit for.
Oh, but... Of course you should, because you woke up at, you know, 6:30 a.m. and then you worked on until midnight. What were those days like? Like, how did you organize your day?
I didn't. I woke up, turned on the computer, and just dealt with things that needed to be done till midnight every day. I mean, it doesn't. For the most part, it didn't feel like work. You know, when you're doing something you love, especially if it's for yourself, and especially if this is something you've started because you find it personally fascinating, then most of it doesn't feel like work. Yes, some of it does, but, you know, like there was some drudgery kind of work I had to do with scanning people's album artwork or fixing all of their typos, but even that felt kind of fun in the big picture, you know? So yeah, there's, even in my family, there's people make fun of me for being a workaholic. And I always say, well, you know, if somebody's sitting there playing their saxophone all day long, do you call them a workaholic? You know, or if somebody's playing video games all day long, we don't call them a workaholic. So why is it that, you know, if I'm doing what I love doing all day long, just because it's at a computer doesn't mean it's work. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing anything I don't love doing. I'm not doing it for anybody else but myself. So it's play.
Great. So ever since CD Baby, do you have the same sort of philosophy? Do you only work on things that you love doing? Can we talk about what you've been doing since then?
Sure.
And then just one thing. For just someone in the audience who doesn't know the outcome of CD Baby, can you talk about that, and then we can move on to what was next? What happened?
Sure. Well, in 2008, really just for personal reasons, I just felt kind of artistically done with it. I sold the company for an amount that I was never going to disclose, but then somebody in a podcast interview like this kind of squeezed it out of me at the end of the interview. And I have a hard time not answering a direct question. So after asking me a bunch of other technicalities on how I sold the business, he said, and what was the selling price? And I went, $22 million. Yeah. So yeah, I sold the company for $22 million. And because I didn't really need or even want the money, what I did is I set up a charitable trust before selling the company. And I think this is a really good trick. And, you know, for those of you listening, if you're thinking you might sell your business someday, consider this structure. If you sell your business, say for $22 million, and you sell it yourself, then that $22 million goes to you, and the tax man will keep, say, $7 million of it, and leaving you with $15 million. And even if you say, I'm a charitable person, I want to give that all to charity, well, now you only have $15 million you can give to charity. But if instead you put your company into a charitable trust before you sell it, then the entire sale transaction is a tax-free charitable transaction. So I put CD Baby into a charitable trust before I sold it, so that when the purchasing company bought it for $22 million, that entire $22 million went to charity and never touched my hands. So it was tax-free. It was a way to, it was a way to give more to charity than if I had just taken the money myself personally.
Why did you decide not to use any of the money and give everything to charity?
The business was already profitable by the time I sold it. So it was, I mean, it had been profitable all along. You know, I told you, like, the second month in business, I made a couple hundred dollars. Mm-hmm. So it was in the black every month. And the last couple of years, it was making a few million dollars per year. And I was the only owner. I had no investors. So that was all mine. So I already had enough money, and I just didn't need any more. I think it's something I think of often in my life, this idea of enough, when you have enough of something. It's like we all know ridiculous examples. Say, there are lots of Indian politicians who have examples of not understanding the word enough. But I think about, like, what was it, in the 80s or 90s, like in the Philippines, it was Imelda Marcos, and they found out that she had like 4,000 pairs of shoes. And anybody can laugh at that situation and go, oh, what an idiot, you know. Mm-hmm. Who could ever wear 4,000 pairs of shoes? But I think a lot of us have versions of that in our life where we buy more things than we can really use, or more things than are really needed to make us happy, right? So, yeah, just already in my day-to-day life, I practice that. Like, where I live, I only have two plates because I don't really like to entertain guests, and I can't eat on more than one plate at a time. Sometimes I do have one person come visit, so I have two plates. That's enough. And, you know, I only own one pair of jeans because that's all I can wear. And if I wash them, that doesn't take long. So one pair of jeans is enough. I don't need 10 pairs. So, you know, that's already just my kind of life philosophy and how I was living. So, yeah, by the time I sold my company, I already had enough to not just live on, but retire on, basically. So, yeah, that's when I mentioned this to my lawyer. He had a tax background, and he knew about this charitable remainder trust. Mm-hmm. Way of setting things up, so I just give it all away in advance.
Right, fantastic. So what drove your personal fascination? I think that was the term that you used. What were you fascinated about after CD Baby, and, you know, what have you been doing since then?
Well, the short answer, if anybody's really interested, I get asked this enough that I actually made a nice little link on my website.
Mm-hmm. To the 10 seconds
that I'm working on now. I would even be next to that, there's a link that's just sivers.org/now, mm-hmm. N-O-W. It goes to a page that says what I'm working on now. And every time I change what I'm working on, I update that page. So that's always what I'm working on now, including links to the daily output of my computer programming and stuff like that, and links to all of my projects I'm working on. So, yeah, really, since I sold CD Baby, I felt like, wow, now I really don't need the money, like, more than ever. So anything I do now should not be for the money, if it ever was, you know. Now, like, more than ever, I should just do things just because they need to be done. So, yeah, there are just some things that I'm working on, so like some web apps that I feel are things that my musician friends need or other people I know need. And a new idea that I just posted about on my blog last week that I'm fascinated with right now is taking everything I've learned from the last 7 or 8 years of book reading I've done, or I've already publicly posted all of my notes for each of the 220-something books I've read over the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. But now I'm thinking of finding a way to kind of summarize and compress everything I've learned into some advice for people that doesn't just talk around the issues, but just specifically says, do this. Here's what you should do based on everything we know.
That's great. You know, I find that so interesting because there's so much information out there these days. People don't want to read, you know, a 300-page or 400-page book. You know, they just want to know what to do, right? They just want to know, okay, what is the gist of this? So you're doing it for 220 books. When are you going to do it for the rest of the books that have been published in this world?
In the world? I guess that would be next year. Yeah, I'll do the rest. But no, it's funny. It's a funny feeling to like tell people what to do. It feels strange because it feels like, hey man, you're not my boss. Who are you to tell me what to do? It's like we have this voice in our head that thinks that if we tell someone what to do, that they will object to that. But actually, I think it's a very considerate thing to do because, I mean, there are many subjects that I do want to read the 300-page book on this subject, but there are other subjects that I don't. You know, so I give an example on my blog at sivers.org/2do. So, you know, to do, sivers.org/to do. I give some examples there where, like, on the subject of diet, I don't really feel like reading a 500-page book that analyzes all of the foods available today and the nutritional content of each. And I just want somebody to tell me, you know, eat this, don't eat that, exercise like this. Here's the culmination of everything we know about nutrition and fitness today says that you should basically do these 10 things. Go. You know, that's all I really want to know. And I'll trust the subject. I don't feel like analyzing the data. But there are some things where we do want to analyze the data. So I think that's why it's useful to provide links for people who want more information. So you can say, do this. And if you doubt it or you wonder why, click this link where you can go read the 400-page book for yourself if you want.
Mm-hmm. So these are obviously, you know, for nonfiction books, especially how-to books. Are you doing this for business books as well? Like, what's the range of genres?
Oh, good question. If you just look on my site, like I said, these are all just publicly out in the open for free for anybody who wants them. So if you go to sivers.org/book, mm-hmm. you'll see all 220 books that I've taken notes for and links to all of my notes. And that's where I'm constantly adding new books every month. So sivers.org/book. Anybody interested, just go there and you'll see all of the books I've read in the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm. And you said you're going to do you have a specific plan to do more and more books? Or are you just going to take it as it comes and just do them for books that you personally read?
Yeah, for ones that I personally read. And it's not, I think it was, when I announced it on my blog, I think it was a little misunderstood by reading the comments. I think a lot of people thought I was talking about like doing Cliff Notes or... Mm-hmm. I think there's a company out there called Blinkist or something that compresses books into executive summaries. And I'm not talking about doing that. I'm talking about just taking everything I've learned in 8 years and summarizing it up, not on a per book basis. So, who knows, if it goes well, maybe it's just something I'll just keep doing for the rest of my life.
And is this a business or is this something that you're just going to publish in your blog?
I think it's just something that I'll... I don't even know if it'll be a blog. I'm open to ideas. If anybody listening to this finds it fascinating, please email me. My email is derek@sivers.org, and I answer every email I get. So feel free to ask me anything or suggest anything or just say hello. And anybody who's interested in this, I'd love to hear any ideas. I think I doubt this is something I would do for money. I think it's just something that needs to be done. I mean, maybe it would turn into a book someday, but you know, books don't really make money anyway.
Mm-hmm. So, Derek, your journey has been pretty fascinating, right? From the time you became a musician and you started CD Baby and all the other things that you did. Do you see Do you like look up to somebody? Do you like you know, have somebody in mind and say, okay, I want to not maybe just not be that person, but you know, try and follow, you know, a few things that that they did, and to try and like, you know, emulate them. Do you have somebody like that, or no?
Yeah, good question. Instead of mentioning the obvious Richard Branson type ones that are almost too easy to mention, I'd actually like to recommend one that I think most people haven't heard of. It's a guy named Rob Walling, W-A-L-L-I-N-G. Rob Walling, he has a business or a website called Micropreneur.
Right.
So it's like entrepreneur mixed with the word micro. So micropreneur.com. I heard him speak at the conference years ago, and I really, really admire what he's doing. Oh, also, he put out a book called Start Small, Stay Small. And that book is in my book list at sivers.org/book. So you can read the notes from it. But he's doing something fascinating where he is a single guy. I'm sorry, single meaning he's just him. He and his wife have, I think, 4 kids or something like that. So he's busy. He doesn't have a lot of free time. And yet he has something like 8 to 12 online businesses that he owns and runs. Each one, he strictly measures his time. So I think he goes into his office at 9 a.m. and then comes out at exactly 5 p.m. And through diligent, disciplined time management from 9 to 5, he somehow runs 8 to 12 profitable little businesses, with each one kind of tracking his time, getting it ready so that when he's ready to sell that business someday, he's able to show a potential buyer, here is exactly how this business runs. I've documented everything that needs to be done to run it. Here is exactly how long it will take you each week to run this business. And I can tell you from years of experience, this is exactly how it works. Here's the 4 letters to you for these situations. Here's how to handle those situations. Here is the manual for how to run this business. And I really admire that. I think it's a really cool approach to this, especially when we tend to get so passionate and emotional about what we do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he loves what he does, but he's just found a really disciplined way to manage it and test the effectiveness of what he's doing. And so, yeah, he writes about it in his book called Start Small, Stay Small. And I think he has a whole community of people that are also doing this approach on his website, micropreneur.com. So highly recommended.
And I believe he has an annual conference too, right? The Micropreneur Conference.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thanks for remembering. Yeah, I haven't been to it yet, but I've been meaning to. So, yeah.
That's great. Thanks for talking about Rob Walling. Start Small, Stay Small is his book, you said. Derek, how do you learn? How do you learn more about life, about business? Do you have a peer group, or I know you say on your website you're an introvert, but do you have a group of people that you meet up with or learn from? I know that in the entrepreneurship world, this whole concept of mastermind, having masterminds is pretty big. So can you talk about that, about how you learn?
Yeah, that doesn't work for me. The whole thing of people getting together and networking and meetup groups, or even the whole thing about like incubators and a bunch of entrepreneurs getting together in the same place and an open plan and a bunch of people sitting there at a big giant table with headphones on. I don't like that at all. If you could see, you know, as we're talking, I'm sitting here like on the edge of New Zealand on the coast looking out at nothing, out at the water with the waves crashing onto these sharp jagged rocks. Like, this is my kind of lifestyle. I love to work alone, and I love to read books. That's really been the main source of my learning, has been from books. And yes, I do have a few friends that are spread around the world that we talk by phone. You know, people like Tynan, Tim Ferriss, Jared Rose, Ramit Sethi. Like, we talk on the phone every now and then, and we trade ideas and, yeah, bounce ideas off each other. Just a phone call once or twice a year is kind of good enough for that kind of thing. I don't really need a big support group. I think this is just an introvert thing. You know, I used to think that I was kind of 50-50 introvert, extrovert. Mm-hmm. But then somebody said, well, if you think you're 50-50, let me ask you this. Where do you go to recharge your batteries? And I said, well, alone, obviously. He said, no, not obviously. He said, I'm the opposite. He said, if I'm alone for more than a few hours, I get really run down and depressed. He said, I need to be around people in order to like charge my batteries. And it turns out that I didn't even know that anybody was like that. I thought everybody got run down being around other people, but no, it turns out I'm the weirdo that's an introvert. So yeah, I kind of object to the constant socialization of business and all the networking stuff. I don't like to be around other people too much.
You know, a lot of literature, entrepreneurship literature on the internet, and I'm glad you brought this up because this is a question that I've always wondered about. They talk about, you know, how single founder businesses are not the way to go. Have you ever missed having a business partner? Because everything you're saying, everything you're saying is that, you know, and I know solopreneurs, there are several solopreneurs like you that do this alone. But I've always wondered for a solopreneur like such as you, have you ever missed having a business partner to sort of share the responsibilities?
Well, you can probably guess my answer. No, but I think the bigger issue is this, that I could be more successful if I had a co-founder, and I could be more successful if I delegated the programming to other people and hired a team of programmers. But instead, I insist on doing everything myself because I enjoy it. You know, I love programming. Therefore, sometimes what would take a team of programmers 2 months to do, I'll do it all myself. And it will take me 2 years, which means all kinds of lost business opportunities, but I don't care because I'm doing this to be happy. Like, I'm not beholden to some investors that are demanding maximum return. I just do everything myself, and so I do it in order to be happy. So, when Paul Graham talks about how, through all of his observations, that he thinks that everybody needs a co-founder, I think, okay, well, that's the rest of that sentence is in order to maximize your chances of financial return, right? But if you're doing it for happiness, then you just have to pay closer attention to what makes you happy. Maybe you want to live out in the countryside in the middle of nowhere and do everything alone. Or maybe you feel like having 10 co-founders and doing everything with your entire family and, you know, sharing with everybody, and that's what makes you happy. You just need to be aware of what makes you happy and just forget about all this advice and people saying what you should be doing. You can listen to them, but only you know what works best for you.
Do you ever get, do you ever get exhausted with some of the things that you have to do as an entrepreneur? And if you do, how do you deal with that?
Good question. Sometimes you just do them the same way that you have to clean your bathroom. You know, it's just, there's some things that just need to be done, doing your accounting or something like that. And you could hire somebody else to do it, but you just need to do it. But I think there are a lot of things that you can challenge the fact of whether you actually need to do it or not. Especially if you're the business owner, you can push back on some of these demands and just say, no, I know this is something you want from me, but I don't feel like doing it. So I won't. it's an important lesson that I learned from a friend of mine who challenged me back whenever I said, like, oh, I hate having all this responsibility. I have to do this. I have to do that. And he said, no, you don't. I said, yeah, you do. You have to pay your employees. You have to pay your taxes. He said, no, you don't. I said, of course you do. He said, no, you don't have to do anything. He said, if you don't pay your employees, there will be some consequences. You know, they will quit and they might sue you. If you don't pay your taxes, you know, the government will eventually come after you and they'll demand a much higher payback plus interest for the money you should have paid them a few years ago. But you don't have to. There will just be consequences if you don't. But you need to understand that all of these things are choices. You are actually free to do whatever you want to do and not to do whatever you don't want to do. You just have to understand the consequences. And if you're happy with the consequences, then yeah, you don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm. So, Derek, when you don't feel like doing something, let's say you have to do your let's take the example that you mentioned, your accounting. When you wake up in the morning and you don't feel like doing something, what do you tell yourself? Just do it if you have to do it, of course, and if you want to do it.
I'll take the same example. Like I just recently, I went and did all of the bookkeeping myself for a project I'm doing. Because in order to output all of those numbers to somebody else to do it, it would have just taken longer than just doing it myself. Because it was all digital. It's not like I could hand somebody a box of receipts. Mm-hmm. So I just kicked and screamed and grumbled, and I poured a nice big pot of tea, and I turned on some good music, and I just spent like 9 hours one day and just did it all. And just, you know, grumbled the whole time, but did it. You know, there are still things like that you have to do.
Right, right. You know, when I was working with my dad in our family business many, many years ago, and I think I was 20 years old, and one day I didn't go to work, and he asked me why. I said, I just don't feel like it. He said, you know, leave your feelings out of this, throw them out the window, just go do your work. So that was a big lesson for me.
I agree with your dad. I think that especially in America and Europe, or especially online, I don't know, especially whatever, that there is this big idea of like, hey man, follow your dreams, follow your passion, just do whatever you want to do. And I think,
Derek, can you hear me? Because I think I can't hear you at all. If you can hear me, are you there?
You done?
Hi, Derek. You just blanked out. Can you talk? Can you repeat whatever you said?
Oh,
20 seconds.
Actually, you know what? I have another interview in 3 minutes. I have to go. I'm really sorry.
That's no problem. Just very quickly, Derek. If you know, just the
can
last.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can just very quickly, if you know, for a solopreneur, if somebody wants to start a solopreneur business, what are the top three actions that and solopreneur online starting an online business? What are the top three actions that someone can take?
Okay. Number one, go read the book E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber.
Right.
Number two, go read Start Small, Stay Small by Rob Walling. And number three, do what they say. They know much better than I do about these things, and those are my main turn to's for advice. Or even honestly, like if you go to sivers.org/book and you look at that list of books there, the list of books on business, I just think too many business owners I know people should be reading more and applying the lessons they learned, because a lot of really smart people have taken a lot of time to compress everything they've learned into a little $20 book, or sometimes even a $9 book. And it is so worth your time and your $9 to go get that book and give it your full attention and take their advice.
I'm going to go to sivers.org/book right now. So thank you so much, Derek. And I apologize, we went a few minutes more than I promised, but this has been so fascinating. I just love the conversation. Thank you so much, and I hope you come back and talk to me another time as well.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. That was Derek Sivers. To learn more about Derek, you can go to sivers.org. That's sivers.org. To be honest, for a week after I did this interview with Derek, I was hooked on to his book summaries page on his website, which is sivers.org/book, where he's written notes for more than 220 books. And I was just totally hooked. So if you like reading different kinds of books, just go to sivers.org/book. I'm sure you will not be disappointed. And if you like, if you'd like case studies like these or interviews like these straight to your inbox, then do me a favor, please, and go to radicaltribe.com/subscribe and type in your email address, and you will never miss a show. Thank you so much again for tuning in. I'll see you next time.